This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Let's look at the impossible. What would happen to New York City if a reactor or two at Indian Point suffered a catastrophic meltdown?
It would have to be evacuated permanently. And what I realized is that it's not the terrorists that's the danger here. It's the actual old, corroded machinery at Indian Point.
Today and every day, tens of millions of Americans in and around New York City risk a Fukushima-style meltdown of two nearby reactors. The Indian Point Energy Center is just 38 miles north of New York City. Those old reactors have leaks, fires, and shutdowns galore. The reactors are very close to a known earthquake fault. And for all this and much more, Indian Point could be America's most dangerous nuclear plant. Now, the triple meltdown at Fukushima in Japan taught us that a nuclear accident is not a local issue. If you live in the Northern Hemisphere or anywhere near an ocean, this is your problem. This is your story. Radio EcoShock investigates with longtime nuclear activist and New York State environmental lawyer Susan Hito Shapiro. Susan, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Hi. A couple of things. Can I just clarify a couple of things that you stated that are actually make it worse than what you said?
All right.
We actually have 20 million people that are in the Indian Point reactor community. That means 20 million people live within 50 miles of Indian Point, and that includes New York City and one of the U.S. mints and, you know, the entire financial markets and everything. And also, Indian Point is only 25 miles, not 38 miles, from Times Square.
Wow.
And, yeah, it's much closer. And it's located on three intersecting earthquake faults. So there are three intersecting earthquake fault lines that Indian Point is right on top of, basically. And the NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, has actually acknowledged that Indian Point is the number one plant in the nation at risk for damage from an earthquake.
Well, I want to ask you more about that in just a second. But first of all, a couple of quick questions. Do you live near the Indian Point reactor complex?
I used to live very close, and now I move further away because of it, but I still work within 11 miles of it, and my father lives within 9 miles of it, and I grew up there. And because I became more knowledgeable, I moved further away, but I'm still within 30 miles.
And could you describe the site a bit for us, for those who don't know? How many reactors are at Indian Point? Who owns them?
Okay, there are two working reactors at Indian Point, but the original Indian Point 1 was shut down but not decommissioned because they still use parts of Number 1, which is one of the first reactors in the country to operate. And it's owned by Entergy, which is a Louisiana-based corporation, and they've basically spun off these small little corporations, so they're shell corporations that currently own Indian Point.
Now, you've raised this earthquake question, and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, as you said, just turned down an attempt by the reactor operator to avoid doing proper quake risk studies. What just happened in December?
Right. The NRC, after Fukushima, did a lessons learned evaluation, and they said, well, you know, they looked at Indian Point as the number one plant in the nation at risk for earthquake fault damage because it wasn't designed for earthquakes. And at that time, they only knew of one fault line running underneath it, but the seismology science has advanced, and now they know that there are three intersecting active fault lines under Indian Point, and it's a very brittle area because it's all bedrock. So an earthquake here is a real jarring experience. It's not like on sand, which, yes, it would be horrible and everything would move, but here on bedrock, things crack. And it's a very fragile kind of situation. So what happened was the NRC said you have to do these studies and these evaluations because Indian Point right now is in the process of getting a new 20-year license. They call it relicensing, but in actuality it's a new license. And that's why they've ordered this. And Entergy tried to, you know, get out of it. And miraculously, actually, the NRC said, no, you actually have to do the study and get it done on time. Normally, the NRC has granted Entergy every request for exemptions from any kind of safety standards that they've ever asked. So this was a real, game changer in that sense, that they said, no, you actually have to do this study.
Yeah, the NRC, it's amazingly slow to protect the public. I read about this, and Entergy has until 2017 to come up with a plan against a quake, and then more years to implement whatever hardening is needed, if they ever do. They always drag their feet. So what happens if nature doesn't follow that schedule and a quake comes sooner?
Well, it's a really big issue. I'll tell you a couple of the other really frightening aspects of Indian Point. You have two natural gas pipelines that run within 500 feet of Indian Point 3. And at Indian Point 3, what the NRC in their infinite wisdom did was they granted Entergy an exemption from fire safety protection standards. And we've been litigating this since 2007. It's still going around and around the litigation cycle. But what basically happened was that the NRC granted approval to use a fire insulating wrap, like we would consider it, insulation in our walls or something, a fire safety. And it's supposed to have a rating of at least, it was originally 3 hours. They said, no, we'll exempt it down to 1 hour. And then it turned out when they actually finally tested the material, called HEMYC, it's HEMYC, it's an insulating material, and Congress finally made them test it after 15 years, they found out that HEMYC doesn't work for an hour. It only works for 24 minutes. So the NRC said to Entergy alone at Indian Point, not to any other plant in the country, Entergy came to them and said, we want an exemption from fixing this, from retrofitting the faulty, defective fire wrap. And the NRC said, sure, no problem. So really, truly, between the entire 20 million people in the New York metropolitan area and a disastrous meltdown is 24-minute fire protection. So if there's an earthquake at Indian Point, besides the fact that the plant isn't designed to withstand anything above a 5.2 earthquake, or 5.4, I think it is, we have this really serious risk of a fire, and a fire that would affect the spent fuel pools and the reactor because we don't have proper insulation, fire protection.
Right, and that is the other huge risk revealed by the Fukushima meltdown in Japan. It's the stupendous amount of highly radioactive spent fuel stored on the site. What is the situation at Indian Point?
Well, right now, every drop of radioactive waste that has ever been produced at Indian Point is at Indian Point, and we're talking about 2,800 tons of high-level radioactive waste that's growing every single day. And it turns out that they're in these very densely packed spent fuel pools that are at least four times denser than they were designed to be. And it's acknowledged that spent fuel pool 2 at Indian Point, number 2, has a crack in it. And they know there's a crack in it, but they don't know where the crack is, and they've only inspected 40% of the pool because they say it's too hard to inspect because it's in bedrock. We know there's a crack there, and they know it's leaking into the Hudson River, strontium, cesium, and tritium. But the NRC has said, don't worry about it. It's okay. It's just leaking into the Hudson River. And so right now the spent fuel pools are so densely packed at Indian Point, and they started moving some of it into dry casks, but that's hardly enough to alleviate the densely packed spent fuel pools.
And so on 9/11, one of the hijacked jets flew pretty near that Indian Point site as it was heading to the World Trade Center, and the operators at Indian Point repeatedly claim their reactors can withstand a direct hit by aircraft. I doubt that, but Susan, are the spent fuel pools protected against such a terrorist attack?
Absolutely not. They are in buildings that are basically, they have a steel roof like a Walmart. They're totally not hardened sites. They're totally not protected. And the terrorists actually flew directly over Indian Point because where they're located on the Hudson River is one of the most navigable rivers in the world. It's a very, very straight tidal river. So at that point, it becomes very straight line. So for an amateur pilot, it wasn't hard for them to go straight down the Hudson. And what we have since learned since 9/11 is that the terrorists had originally considered hitting Indian Point, but decided not to, instead hit the World Trade Center.
But we don't really have to wait for a terrorist attack. Tell us about the fires, the accidents, the leaks, and the shutdowns at Indian Point.
Okay, so, you know, when I first got involved in this, it was right after 9/11. I had a little girl in preschool 3 miles from Indian Point, and that's why I got involved at first. And at first, we were all concerned about the terrorism. And what I realized is that it's not the terrorists that's the danger here. It's the actual old, corroded machinery at Indian Point that's the danger. The fact that it's the corroded, aged concrete and rebar steel with multiple miles of underground piping that has not been inspected, and really, really poor operations controls, and also security controls are very degraded at Indian Point. And, you know, the reality is Indian Point, when it was first sited, the population in this area was 10 times less than it is today. And we don't have any evacuation routes out of our region. It's surrounded by a mountain range called the Rampa Mountains. They're not very high, but they are like what the Rockies, many, many millennia ago, they were like the Rockies. And so it's a range, and there's only a few passes and a few routes out. And so we're talking about, you know, 20 million people trying to escape this area. And it's just not a reality.
And it looks to me like the NRC is only requiring an evacuation plan for a 10-mile radius around Indian Point, and that's pretty strange considering the American government advised its citizens to pull back 50 miles from Fukushima during that accident. So what are they doing here with these emergency plans?
Well, we all know the emergency plans don't work. And in fact, New York State Governor Pataki spent almost $1 million, brought in an expert from FEMA, James Lee Witt, to evaluate whether the evacuation plans work. And he did a very extensive, thorough report and came back saying they don't work and they're not fixable. We do not have the road infrastructure. We do not have the transportation systems that could adequately get the people out of the area. And we also have, like, for example, when Sandy, the Superstorm Sandy hit, what happened was we had a storm surge at Indian Point on the Hudson River, but they kept operating the plant. Now, everyone's power was down. There were trees down. People couldn't drive for 2 weeks, but they kept operating the plant until there was a hot shutdown, which is the most dangerous way to shut down a plant, highest risk of doing it. But the NRC's issue is let's keep the companies profitable at the risk of all these people's lives. They don't really take that into account is what, you know, having spent many years now looking into this, that their issue is all profit, bottom line, dollars and cents to the corporation, and not, they don't look at the actual cost of what life would be if such a, you know, disaster would happen.
You're tuned to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. Our guest is environmental lawyer Susan Hito Shapiro. She lives not far from the Indian Point nuclear reactor site, as we've heard. Well, now, Susan, I think the nuclear industry would claim that up to 30% of electricity for New York City is provided by the Indian Point reactors. Does New York City need to go dark if we finally shut down this plant?
That number, 30%, is totally inaccurate and false. They advertise, you know, 25, 30% that they supply to New York City. That's not true. It's a 2,000-megawatt reactor, and they only supply today 350 megawatts to Con Ed, which is the New York City electricity supplier. The rest are selling at the highest bidder on the open market. On top of the fallacy of the amount, by law, New York City can only receive, I think it's 18% of its power from outside the city. The rest of the power has to be produced within the boundaries of the city. So the reality of 25-30% is just false. The Public Service Commission has proven over and over again that that's not true. And the reality is, in the grid in New York State, we have plenty of capacity. Indian Point has been dark for extended periods of time, and there's never been a power problem in New York at all. There's a transmission problem, but there's not a power problem.
There's some odd supporters of this project to keep it going, and I found it strange that Reverend Al Sharpton turned up to support Indian Point. He said the alternative of natural gas plants would pollute the air worse for African Americans. Myself, I think African Americans might be the last people to be evacuated if Indian Point melts down, as they were in New Orleans after Katrina. What do you make of some of the opponents, or let's say the proponents of this project, the people who are supporting keeping it going?
Well, it's an interesting situation. What has happened is that Entergy has spent a lot of money in the African American community buying support. They've set up these fake front not-for-profit organizations. One's called New York Area. You can look at it. They acknowledge that they've set it up. And what they do is they actually bus in people who know nothing about the issue, who've been paid $10 and given a dinner or a lunch, and they carry signs, and they say, we don't want it because we're going to get asthma, because you're going to want to put more coal fire plants, you know, in my community. Well, that's totally false. I mean, we've done multiple studies, and it turns out in New York City alone, if you just put solar on all the buildings that are municipally owned buildings, you would have enough energy to power New York City. The anti-nuclear movement is not pro-fracking and pro-natural gas, nor pro-coal. We believe all dirty energy is not the solution. We have the technology and the knowledge today to move forward with a clean energy future. And it turns out that nuclear has been promoted and is being promoted right now by the federal EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, as a solution to coal, that as an emissions-free energy. Well, that happens to be one of the biggest fallacies of all. Nuclear is not emissions-free. It not only gives off radioactive byproducts constantly, all the time that it's operating, and it gives off thermal pollution, superheating the air and the water around nuclear plants at much higher rates than any other kind of energy. But it also gives off an enormous amount of carbon-14 and other carbon-based products and methane that is never calculated. And then when you look at the entire nuclear fuel cycle, its carbon footprint is comparable to a natural gas plant. And so it's a big fallacy that nuclear is emissions-free.
So have you found that there are certain health studies that show a high risk around this nuclear plant?
Yes, we did a study, an epidemiological study that you can find on radiation.org regarding thyroid cancer, because thyroid cancer is a marker for exposure to radiation. And it turns out around Indian Point, in the three counties surrounding Indian Point, the thyroid cancer rate is astronomically higher than the rest of the nation. In one county, it's 108% higher, another is 76% higher. And we've also been monitoring. We've been doing citizen science monitoring. And shockingly, we were surprised that the radiation levels are actually, we can actually see when there are spikes doing our citizen science monitoring. And it's in the areas where the thyroid cancer is the highest.
And what's the position of the New York State governor?
Well, he has said he thinks Indian Point should be shut down. But recently we had a very disappointing ruling from the court that said that Indian Point does not need state approval because they can be grandfathered in, because they were cited, you know, in the 1970s before a lot of environmental laws were even on the books. However, we are still waiting on one really major possibility of shutting down this plant, and it's in the governor's hands, and so we're trying to, the governor and the Department of Environmental Conservation's hands, is they ruled on 2010 that Indian Point could no longer use the Hudson River because it does not use closed cycle cooling, and that it's releasing radioactivity into the Hudson River. And that's been in an appeals, it's gone to the Supreme Court, it's come back down. They've ruled that they have to put in this closed cycle cooling. Entergy's been fighting against it, and I think we're in the final round of appeals this spring, and we will see. We will see what happens. You know, I don't believe the battle's over yet, and I still think we have a very strong position on that issue. It's a Clean Water Act. They're in violation. They've been in violation since they began operation in the 1970s of the Clean Water Act.
So who are some of the citizen activist groups who are trying to get these two dangerous reactors closed down?
We have Hudson River Clearwater, which was Pete Seeger's, you know, founding organization, and Riverkeeper and Scenic Hudson. We all work together as a coalition called the Indian Point Safe Energy Coalition. You know, there are groups and individuals. When right after 9/11, we had 75 groups that had become part of the coalition. And, you know, no one's backed out at this point. They're still all members.
And what do these groups want done to provide more safety for the site?
There's multiple things. One is we want to have fire protection. We want proper fire insulation in the plant. We want to make sure the seismology is, you know, they build it correctly or retrofit it so that it can withstand the earthquakes that are in our region. We want to have the piping that's leaking fixed. We want the groundwater to be cleaned up. And one of the big lawsuits that's currently out there is a multi-billion dollar lawsuit by the security guards at Indian Point for failure of the security system, for multiple failures of the security system. And we don't believe that there's any security at Indian Point at this point. There's no no-fly zone over Indian Point. You can basically take a kayak and go right up to it. It's a very unsecured site.
Well, considering the terrorist problems that have cropped up in various parts of the world, that sounds pretty dumb. And you would think Wall Street might worry that they have to leave town permanently due to a nearby nuclear accident. After Fukushima, the Japanese seriously considered abandoning Tokyo, and some big companies did move out of that city. Let's look at the impossible. What would happen to New York City if a reactor or two at Indian Point suffered a catastrophic meltdown?
It would have to be evacuated permanently. In New York City is right within the line of the way the wind blows. It would absolutely have to be, the 20 million people in the region would have to be evacuated permanently. And I don't know, I know you're in Canada. I don't know if you have the same kind of law called the Price-Anderson Act, but it turns out that under the federal government that if there's a nuclear accident, there's a limit of liability by the nuclear owners to $12.2 billion. It turns out that the property values in this region are over $8.5 trillion. And if everyone looked at their homeowner's policy, at their insurance policy, there's a nuclear exclusion. And all businesses, any insurance, you cannot get insurance for a nuclear accident. Whether you're a business, a homeowner, it would basically bankrupt the United States if there was an accident at Indian Point. It has the highest density of any nuclear plant in the world around it.
Well, you'd say that could never happen, but then it happened at Fukushima, and they said it could never happen there either.
Yeah, it's one of those things. They're betting. It's a gamble. That's Indian Point is one of the biggest gambles that the United States has continued to take and is continuing to take, and that's why we've been fighting to get it closed down, because we really see it as a gamble. And at the end of the day, even when it's closed, you're still going to have the waste there because there is no place to put nuclear waste. And there is absolutely no solution for what to do with nuclear waste anywhere in the world at this point. And the idea of burial is there is no site on the planet that is safe to bury it without some sort of contamination to groundwater. And the amount of waste heat that's produced from nuclear waste continues on and on for millennia, as well as the radiation.
Once you start it, it's never really over, but at least it could be a lot safer than it is. If those reactors weren't working, they could start the process of decommissioning. Even if it takes a couple of generations, they could make it better.
I agree with that. One of the other sides of the problem is that there's no funding. The decommissioning funds are not adequate to actually do proper decommissioning. And the other thing you asked, what we want? We want the nuclear fuel out of the spent fuel pools and put into dry cast hardened storage. Right now, the way they're even putting the dry cast at Indian Point is not hardened. They're on flat, like concrete pads, not bolted down, and not in the quality dry cast storage. They're in Holtec casts, which are one of the lowest and worst rated, and around the world they don't use them. In other countries, in Germany and in France, they don't even use them because they're so poorly designed.
So can you give us some websites or social media places so that our listeners can follow up on this?
Sure. You can go to IPSEC info.org. You can go to radiation.org, which is Radiation Public Health Project that has a lot of epidemiological and health studies on that site, riverkeeper.org, clearwater.org, and each one of those has a link to their Indian Point campaign.
We've been talking with environmental lawyer and longtime nuclear critic and activist Susan Hito Shapiro. You can find links to those local action groups and news about this awful reactor in my Radio EcoShock blog, published every Wednesday at ecoshock.info. Susan, I want to thank you not just for talking with us, but also I found out you've been spending years and years trying to defend the public against this nuclear threat.
Yeah, it's an uphill battle, but there's a group of us that are very dedicated to trying to at least open the public's eyes. That's the biggest problem we have in New York City. The majority of people don't even know that they're 25 miles from this, very dangerous reactor system.
Well, maybe a few of them will hear this program. We can hope for that. I'm Alex Smith, reporting for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.